There is a lot of terrible stuff in the Bible. Terrible and terrifying, murderous and mystifying. The slaughter of innocent children, the raping of women, the wrenching grief of Job. And among all the terrible and terrifying stuff in the Bible, there is this sentence. Now, Israel loved Joseph more than all his other children. Israel, a father, loved one son, Joseph, more than the rest of all of his children. That's bad enough, though I suppose one can forgive a parent for harboring a special love, a secret love that cherishes one child a smidgen over the others. Parents, after all, are human. And every single one of you here knows something about this special love, this privileging love, if not in your own life or your own family's life, then in someone else's. You know about the favored child, the one doted on, the one who escapes all the blame. And you know about the less favored one. Forever a disappointment, never quite who or what had been hoped for. Every single one of you knows something about this. My parents, David of blessed memory and Nancy, they were scrupulous in their even-handedness toward their three children, trying with every fiber of their beings to be as fair, as unbiased, and equitable toward their three children as was humanly, parentally possible. But even that exertion of effort gave them away. The studied, conscientious, determined effort to demonstrate an absolute even-handedness toward their children, to admit of no bias, to reveal no hint of a special love, even that exertion betrayed the difficulty and the delicacy of this age-old task. And some parents are better at this than others, and for some parents it's very, very hard, and for others it's not hard at all. But old Israel, he didn't even try. Israel loved Joseph more than all his other children, and to prove it, to demonstrate this special love so that it was clear to all the world and clear as day to his other children, from Reuben down to Benjamin, to make it clear as clear can be, Israel made or had made for young Joseph a gift. In the Hebrew, kethoneth pasim, a coat, a robe, even a gown, a fabulous, luxurious, over-the-top garment. Kethoneth pasim, meaning from soles to palms. That's the word, from soles to palms, meaning this coat with all of its material went from the palms of his hands to the soles of his feet. A long, flowing gown with lots of material. Now, I know there's a few of you here from the mission trip to New Orleans, a few of you who are just back. Lucy, Evelyn, Mercedes, Caitlin? Is that Caitlin? So you're just back from the mission trip. And I know for a fact, because I've seen the pictures out there, that you didn't wear long, flowing gowns, right, when you were working, when you were hammering nails and cleaning bathtubs. In fact, I've seen the pictures, and you wore as little as you could get away with, right? The thing about Joseph's robe, this gift from his father, this extravagant, sumptuous, conspicuous gift, it all but prevented him from doing any work at all. And that's not all. There is one other appearance in the Bible of this phrase, Kephaneth Passim. It appears in the book 2 Samuel. Princess Tamar, King David's daughter, is wearing one, where we are told, explicitly told, clearly and directly, that Kephaneth Passim is the sort of robe worn by virgin princesses. So you see what Israel has done to Joseph. He has dressed his teenage son, his 17-year-old teenage son, in a gown that signals both royalty and, God help him, maidenly virginity. There's a lot of terrible stuff in the Bible. And among all the terrible and terrifying stuff, there is this sentence: Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his other children together. If you are acquainted with Harry Potter, or if you ever married an Englishman, you will be familiar with the word git. Git is slang used in the UK as an insult for somebody annoying, troublesome, unpleasant, or thoughtless. It can also mean that someone is just plain luckier than you, and you resent the heck out of their good fortune. The British slang word git comes from get, in the sense of beget, hence, I'll spell this, B-A-S-T-A-R-D. So without putting too fine a point on it, Joseph is a full-blown, bona fide, grade A git. You can sympathize with him. It's not really his fault, his father's favoritism, his unusual attire. So one of the brothers sees Joseph coming. He sees him a mile away, and he calls out to the other brothers, and they all turn and look. They make out Joseph's distinctive silhouette, the flowing gown, the sway of his hips, the leisurely gait of one whose life is unhurried and unharried. But I wonder if you can see what is so wrong with this picture. It's all right, I will tell you how backwards this picture is. In the ancient world, shepherds hold a necessary but a very lowly position, a position assigned typically to the youngest son in the family. Joseph, the youngest at age 17, he should be the one out there shepherding the sheep. And all these older brothers, quite a bit older than Joseph, they should be long gone by now, married, independent, on their own. You see, there is something decidedly dysfunctional about this family. And I haven't even told you about the time Reuben raped one of his father's concubines. Or, I haven't mentioned, that while all 13 siblings share the same father, Israel, there are three mothers involved. Are you getting the picture now? So staring toward the approaching Joseph, watching the swing of his gown and the sway of his hips, you can all but taste the hate in his brothers' mouths. They begin to conspire against Joseph. And really, can you blame them? There is a lot of terrible stuff in the Bible. And among all the terrible and terrifying stuff in the Bible, there is this sentence: Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his other children. Brothers, there's Cain and Abel. That didn't go so well. Jacob and Esau, Castor and Pollux, Paris and Hector, Zeus, Poseidon, and Hades. There's the brothers Grimm, the brothers K, the Wright brothers, Lehman Brothers, the Blues Brothers, and Ringling Brothers. There's Jesse and Frank, Jack, Bobby, and Teddy, Peyton and Eli, James and Whitey. There's something about brothers, something universal and familiar, epic and particular, something about love and power, inheritance and favor, loyalty and contempt, rivalry and contest. Today, August 7th, is the actual anniversary of the day in 1882 when a long-standing feud between brothers erupted in this country. Today is the anniversary of the day the feud erupted between the Hatfields of Southwest Virginia and the McCoys of East Kentucky. Today is the anniversary of the day in 1882 when between them the Hatfields and McCoys killed or wounded 100 of their family members. And this weekend we mark the anniversary of the bombing of Hiroshima and contemplate together the consequences of our human contests for power, for land, and favor with the gods. And today, we are in the midst of the holy season of Ramadan. And I can't help but think of the children of Abraham, the cousin faiths of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, of the terror and violence wrought by these warring siblings, and how today we mourn the death of soldiers fighting in a war in Afghanistan. Today, in the midst of a global monetary crisis with our siblings in the European Union wrestling over power and policy, with the U.S. House and the U.S. Senate, brothers mostly, Republicans and Democrats, feuding over debt, taxes, budget, power, ideology. The story of Joseph and his brothers almost seems tame in comparison. Joseph and his brothers, or Israel and his sons, are presented by the biblical authors as eponymous figures, which is to say, Israel, aka Jacob, is intended to represent the whole nation of Israel. And the sons, Reuben and Levi, Dan and Asher, and all the rest, each represents one of the 12 tribes of Israel. Tribes that will be by turns family and rival, friend and foe. Today's reading, today's lectionary reading, ends on a terrible note. A brother betrayed, sold into slavery, a father's favoritism bearing rotten and bitter fruit. But the story doesn't end with today's reading. God finds a way to work with and through even imperfect parents, even jealous brothers, even pampered gits. God is patient with us and exceedingly forgiving. But because I don't want to end here with the story, I hope you will, between now and next Sunday, take up the book of Genesis. Continue reading chapters 37 through 50, 37 to the end of the book of Genesis. Wait and see what God can do. There is a lot of terrible and terrifying stuff in the Bible. But only because there is a lot of terrible and terrifying stuff on earth between brothers and sisters. Special loves and special hatreds, the warring of siblings, and human failures on a grand scale with epic consequences. But there is nothing so terrible or terrifying No one so lost or irredeemable that God's hands are tied or God's realm denied. If you believe this, please say, Amen.